weather, truth, and fun. We're iHub Radio, homegrown in the Coachella Valley. For a fresh take on the news with Anita Rufus. You won't know if you don't listen.
Listen, here's the fun part. When we're listening to the news, which we are, which of course we want you to be listening to at the break at the top of the hour, John McMullen and I are sitting here having wonderful political arguments because I describe John McMullen, he's the guy who made iHub happen, I describe John McMullen as somebody who has only one purpose in life, and that is to get aggravated by reality. And I'm not going to let him talk back, which he just loves to.
My only purpose is to help get rid of this president.
Your only purpose is to be right. Please. Okay. I want to talk quickly about impeachment. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. You're listening to iHub Radio. Okay, it's a little crazy. I want to talk briefly about impeachment because this past week was interesting. I watched it all as much as I could. I listened to it on the radio when I was in the car. And by the way, if you want to be able to hear it on the radio in the car, that's what NPR is for, as opposed to the fact that the president retweeted some right-wing idiot today saying, why does NPR even exist? It even exists because if you want to hear the impeachment on the radio while you're in the car, or because your TV went out, or because you can't afford cable, guess what? That's what NPR is for. And very little of their funding comes from the federal government anyway, and it ought to. Excuse me. I'm getting a little het up. So here's what I know about impeachment. This past week, impeachment trial began in the Senate. The stock market hit a new high. The president was in Davos and then at the March for Life. Go figure. And what does all of this mean? We're bombarded with it. I have to say, I was fascinated by the fact that CNN and MSNBC were showing every minute of the impeachment presentation, and they will do the same for the president's presentation. They will comment and they will evaluate and they will assess during the breaks. On Fox, on the other hand, they're hardly even doing the actual coverage. What they're doing is showing it in a little corner box that you can't hear and refuting in real time whatever the House managers were saying to try and show that the president deserved to be impeached. So they're not even letting their own viewers see it for themselves, let alone listen to the interpretations when there are breaks. They're in real time having people refuting what is being heard on the floor of the Senate and telling you that they are the only network that will tell you the truth, not let you see the truth for yourself, but tell you the truth. Now, the idea that the Democrats stalled this into an election year and the Republicans then saying, well, you guys can't do this in an election year. Remember when McConnell refused to have the Senate even debate, let alone vote, to approve Barack Obama's appointment to the Supreme Court in the person of Merrick Garland. We can't do that in election year. Well, now we can't have an impeachment in election year. The people should decide. Well, They didn't think the representatives of the people should decide about a Supreme Court justice in an election year. They're also making, some of the people on Fox are making the argument, well, you should never impeach a president in his first term. What? Yes, sure. Let's forget that he may have done something wrong that is a violation of the Constitution and his oath of office, and push it into letting him get reelected before we impeach him. That's just insane. And that these excuses are what are being put forward is insane. Now, there was a great article by a guy named Steve Perlstein in Business. And he's a Washington Post economic columnist. And he wrote this in the Sunday Business edition of the Washington Post. He said, in the modern era, there are few, if any, examples of a country with a healthy, thriving economy and a broken political system. What distinguishes a successful economy from a failing one? For example, what distinguishes Denmark from Italy or South Korea from North Korea is the laws, rules, norms, and policies that create the framework in which any economy operates. We can see the deterioration in our inability to adapt to changing conditions, like the rise of China as an economic superpower, or the influx of economic and political refugees, or the threat from global warming. Our approach has been to deny the problem, demonize those with whom we disagree, and ostracize anyone who dares to compromise. The grounds for impeachment include abuse of power. And when I was joking about Louis XIV, he's the French ruler during the Gilded Age who said, "L'État, c'est moi." I am the state. I talked last week about autocracy and why it is so dangerous. And it turns out that in monarchies, where the family has the tradition of appointing their successors, and they're already starting to try and model the idea that Trump Jr. will be next. In monarchies and other systems built around one man or one woman rule, I think you have to go back to the Amazons to find that one, the leader's quirks or obsessions or inadequacies become fashionable attributes of greatness. When we want to make sure that it's the king who is being extolled, we don't let anyone say that the emperor has no clothes. For example, and this is about how acolytes reinforce autocrats, Castilian Spaniards. Way back when, the Castilian Spaniards replaced the S sound in words with a TH sound. So, for example, there are some cultures right now where the language doesn't say cerveza for beer. They say cerveza. That was because King Ferdinand had a lisp. At least that's the story. And the truth is, we have seen something like that happen to large groups of the Republicans because Trump is unteachable about how our system is supposed to work. Everybody who has interacted with him on any kind of a day-to-day basis will tell you he doesn't listen. He is ignorant. He has no intellectual curiosity to learn. So he doesn't know how the system's supposed to work. And politicians and even some in the media have dropped their views on foreign policy or debt or trade because they want to be in sync with the president. You know, this book came out and there was some publicity for it this past week called A Very Stable Genius. over 200 valid sources scrupulously reported about how early members of the Trump administration struggled to teach him what the job was. And they were called dopes and babies because they did not see our alliances and our military assets as an opportunity to turn a profit. That is all this man knows. At the American Enterprise Institute, Yuval Levin has written, "Every scandal will proceed in whatever way is maximally designed to public confidence in our core institutions." I'm sorry, which is maximally damaging to public confidence in our core institutions. Each twist and turn and revelation will give everyone on all sides of our politics just enough reason to believe that their side is in the right, that the other side knows it but is corrupt, and that the only way to get justice is to recognize that there is no alternative to stretching the norms and rules of our politics. Welcome to Trump land. Abuse of power. He doesn't even know what his powers are supposed to be. He is not consciously abusing anything. When he sits at a dinner table, at a dinner that includes people like Lev Parnas, and he is told that the ambassador to Ukraine, an entrenched public servant at the Department of State who has represented our country all over the world in very difficult situations. The president, who doesn't even know who she is. That's clear in the tape that just came out. He doesn't even know who Marie Yovanovitch is. But he is told by this toady working with Rudy Giuliani that she's been saying negative things about Donald Trump and that he might be impeached. And without even knowing who she is or anything about her background, and being taped on a telephone at a table where he is sitting with people who are not even part of his own cabinet, people like Lev Parnas. How can they be taping his conversation, for God's sake? And without knowing who he is, he says, get rid of her. It boggles the mind. It truly does boggle the mind. In 1788, George Mason worried that the president's broad pardon power would allow him to lawfully pardon crimes which were advised by himself. Impeachment was meant to cover the wanton removal of meritorious officers, throwing people out of positions because they don't benefit you personally. That's the definition of abuse of power, allowing for impeachment of a president.
News, weather, and a couple of dozen loudmouths. This is iHub Radio. She calls it as she sees it. Now, here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, so we have in our White House at the moment a man who believes he is Louis XIV, that he is the state, and that Article 2 of the Constitution lets him do whatever he wants. Well, there's a little bit more news that I want to at least throw out because otherwise I will just throw up. The Pentagon said that 34 members of our military service were diagnosed with traumatic brain injuries as a result of that Iranian missile strike on our troops in Iraq. That's about triple the number that were originally reported as injured. And for what it's worth, 8 of the soldiers who had been sent for treatment in Germany were then sent to the United States for additional treatment. And I don't know if you heard the president. Originally, he had said no Americans were injured, and he downplayed the idea that, you know, because that gave him the ability to mollify his position regarding Iran. Well, yeah, they struck back as a result of us killing their general, but nobody was hurt. And okay, you know, now we can maybe negotiate going forward. The president, who cannot stand to be wrong, how is it possible that the Pentagon could say something that would make the president wrong when he said no Americans were injured? He said, well, no, I heard they had headaches and a couple of other things. But I would say, and I can report, it's not very serious. Traumatic brain injuries, 34 U.S. service members, 8 of them who had to be sent all the way back to the United States for treatment. Now, the president has threatened our European allies when he was at Davos, Switzerland, at this big economic event. We do know, and we did expect, that he would get into it with Greta Thunberg, who was also there to talk about the climate chaos. And climate issues were supposed to be the main theme at this forum. Taking the stage just hours after Greta Thunberg, Trump touted America's role as the biggest oil and gas producer and dismissed climate activists as, and these are his words, prophets of doom. He threatened to put hefty tariffs on European cars while he was in Davos. Hardball tactics if trade negotiations didn't go his way. And Secretary of the Treasury Steve Mnuchin warned that Italy and Britain could face United States tariffs if they pursue taxes on large digital companies like Facebook and Google. No less than French President Macron agreed to delay that kind of tax in order to avoid Trump's tariffs. And all this really tells us is that, first of all, the president does not even begin to understand the concept of negotiation. He threatens, and he does it with regard to economics because it's the only thing he even remotely understands. And he does not internalize that it's us, American taxpayers, who are going to pay for those tariffs anyway. So he threatened tariffs. And in fact, what that is a clear display of is the growing rift between our allies in Europe and the United States. Now, he's also threatening California. If we continue to require that companies that offer health insurance must provide coverage that includes abortion services, the president warned that California has to stop requiring that or that we will lose federal money coming into the state. So look, there's a long-running argument about whether abortion services should be covered by health insurance. And in California, we have that law that health insurance is required to provide abortion coverage. The president, by the way, the first president to show up in person this past week at the March for Life, the president is threatening California. They gave us 30 days to repeal our abortion mandate. Of course, they didn't say which federal funds would be jeopardized. But this is Trump's way of trying to get back at a state that he doesn't think supports him at all. So screw it. We'll just hurt California. And by the way, there are 5 other states, including New York and Illinois and Washington State, that have the same requirement. But he's not threatening them. You know, some of them may decide they want to vote for him. So climate change really was the top business and finance issue that was discussed at Davos. And it has become a lightning rod for business and finance leaders all across the world, including the International Monetary Fund, the Bank for International Settlements, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, major international banks, and supposedly the official agenda at Davos was going to be dedicated entirely to climate change. Business and finance leaders understand this is a huge priority.
Live from Palm Springs, she calls it as she sees it. Local talk that's moving the needle. Here's Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
And I thank you so much for joining me. I want to apologize. I got cut off because I absolutely lost track of the clock, and I was talking about how climate change was the focus, supposedly, of this world leaders and financial gurus getting together in Davos, Switzerland this past week. And I want to complete this one thought. This Bank for International Settlements, which is described as the central bank for central banks, they warned that climate change could cause potentially extremely financially disruptive events that could be behind the next systemic financial crisis. And what they mean is world recession. And here in our country, with a president who frankly doesn't believe in it and frankly doesn't care, it turns out that states that are applying for billions of dollars that are part of a federal natural disaster program, obviously when they apply for this money, they have to tell the government why they need the money. Some conservative states are avoiding mentioning climate change at all. The Trump administration program to help states prepare for natural disasters shows what kind of tortured political language everybody is resorting to as a result of this ignorant president. There was a proposal from the state of Texas, which you'll recall was hit by Hurricane Harvey, a 306-page draft proposal for this federal natural disaster program doesn't use the term climate change at all. They refer to changing coastal conditions. South Carolina, their proposal talks about the destabilizing effects and unpredictability of three major storms in 4 years hitting South Carolina, but they don't mention climate change. Louisiana does mention climate change, but it's in an appendix in the final page of their application. Now, give Florida credit. In their proposal to get money, they said climate change is a key overarching challenge which threatens to compound the extent and effects of hazards, which is why they need money in this federal natural disaster program. Climate change worldwide. China. There have been previous efforts to try and get rid of the use of plastic bags, and in China that hasn't gone well. But the government of China has now indicated that they're going to be much more serious and systematic in tackling these problems. Interestingly enough, the Chinese generally generate less plastic waste per person than Americans do. And yet they are at least going to focus on this. And one of their focuses will be to have better managed landfills so that they can minimize these problems. And finally, you know about the horrible, horrible fires in Australia. Well, I read this article, this item in the paper, and I thought, now, see, this is the kind of thing that doesn't really get reported. But the irony of the fact that Australia's biggest mining company announced that coal output was down because of the fires, the wildfires. The reason coal output was down is because of the wildfires, which were a crisis that was exacerbated by climate change, which is caused in no small part by the mining of coal. Evidently, the irony was not lost on many Australians. Okay, switching gears. Voting has actually begun. The Iowa caucuses are a little more than a week away, but early voting is already open to millions of Americans around the country. In Minnesota, in-person early voting began on January 17th. Vermont's deadline to mail out absentee ballots was January 17th. Many of the 14 Super Tuesday states, including California, and that date is March 3rd, will offer some form of early voting between now and mid-February. And as Joy Silver told us in that first hour, mail-in ballots are going out to California voters within the next week to 10 days. Now, those of you who are registered to vote in California, you need to know that if you have registered saying that you have no party preference, in other words, that you consider yourself an independent, more than one-fourth of the 20 million voters in California are registered with no party preference. But here's what that means. If you like to vote by mail, and the majority of those people do, you're going to get ballots with no presidential candidates listed. If you want to be able to vote in the primary for the presidency, you have to get in touch with the county registrar and ask for a ballot for one of the three primaries that are open to unaffiliated voters. You can get a ballot for the Democratic, for the Libertarian, or for the American Independent parties. Or you can re-register if you want to vote for a candidate in a party whose primary is only open to members of that party, like the Republicans. Just under a million unaffiliated male voters have not asked for crossover ballots yet. Now, if you go to the polling place, even if you're a voter with no party preference, if you walk into a polling place, you can cast a ballot in person requesting a ballot for the party that you want to vote for in the primary. But there's a whole lot of people going to get really messed up about this. And I have to say that with regard to primary voting, I did not agree at the time that we passed that thing that said the top two candidates in each race, regardless of party, are the ones who will end up being on the final ballot. If you're going to have a party system, then the people who are in that party ought to get to vote for who the party is going to have. Also, with regard to 2020, the hacking that we know is going on, and the fact that most of the places that people are going to vote can be hacked. There are some states that are starting to put out the kind of anti-hacking and for sure paper backup ballot. Some states are doing that, but not all of them. So, if your vote matters to you, and you better make sure you vote if you want your voice to be heard. If your vote matters to you, you better make sure that you know how to vote and where you're going to vote. And if you're going to vote by mail, you need to make sure that you've got a ballot that reflects who you want to vote for in a primary. Primaries are March 3rd. Don't wait to get in touch with the county registrar if you think you may have a problem. Okay, I got a bunch of things that you might not know if you didn't listen to this program. And I want to start with the fact that 9 parents who had been deported back to Guatemala by the Trump administration in our name, who had been separated from their children at the border, they were deported without their children. Because in many cases, the Trump administration hadn't really kept track and didn't know how to find their children in time to make sure the children were with the parents who were deported. Well, it turns out that a federal judge found that the U.S. government had unlawfully prevented those people from seeking asylum. They came back to the United States this past week. 9 of these parents got to reunite with their children who they had not seen for a year and a half, 18 months separated from their children, sent back to Guatemala, according to a federal judge, illegally, because the government had unlawfully prevented them from seeking asylum. One man, and this is what prompted me to want to tell you this story. In some cases, some of the children were at the airport to greet the parents, and David Zoll, 9-year-old son Byron, David fell to one knee and tearfully embraced his son for about 3 minutes, patting the back of his head. And all he could say was, "He was so small. He's grown so much." At 9 years old, think about if you hadn't seen your child for a year and a half. That is being done in our name. Okay. On a slightly lighter note, well, maybe not so much lighter, we know that women have been doing better in the labor market, but their jobs still don't pay as well as men. And most of the jobs that women are in still don't appeal to men. Now, you know, we have a lot more men now as nurses, where it always used to be only women who were nurses. Traditionally, men were the teachers in classrooms. Then it became all women, which is why they were able to pay teachers so little and get away with it. Well, more men are going into the teaching profession who want to make a difference and aren't just worried about making about a lot of money. But the latest jobs report shows that male-dominated occupations, like manufacturing jobs, are shrinking, while those that are growing, like healthcare and education, are in fact dominated still by females. That puts men at a disadvantage. But it also keeps female-dominated jobs underpaid. I don't think that would be the case if women ruled the world. And hey, why not? We've tried it with men all this time, and look where it's gotten us. And in that case, I mean us women. I thought this was an interesting item you may have missed. Tesla took over Volkswagen as the world's second most valuable car maker, just behind Toyota from Japan. Tesla's stock more than doubled in value in the last 3 months. They've taken over as the world's second most valuable car maker. So now it's Toyota, Tesla, and Volkswagen. What do you think your kids are being taught? I'm going to tell you in a minute. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, here live every Sunday from 10 to noon at iHub Radio. Thank you.
because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, as we finish out this hour of the show, again, I want to thank you so much for tuning in. I'm here live Sundays from 10 to noon. Today, by the way, is January 26th. I can't believe this month is almost over. It just got here. Couple of stories that I think fell through the cracks this week because, depending on what you were watching, it was all about the impeachment hearings, or it was about talking about why the impeachment hearings weren't doing the right thing, or it was background information that put all those talking heads on so that they could all give their opinions and influence our opinions. But there are a couple of things that happened this past week that really struck me and that I don't want to get falling through the cracks. One is, if you will recall, at one point the United States was involved in torture. There's no other way to put it. It is true. You may think it's okay, given the circumstances of 9/11 and needing to get as much information as we could about impending threats. I'll have that argument with you. But torture is torture. It is illegal worldwide. And if one chooses to engage in it in whatever way, for whatever reason, one should then have to face the consequences. The psychologist who led what the CIA came to call enhanced interrogation. There's this court hearing going on regarding the infamous Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, a hearing before a military commission. And James Mitchell, who was the person who personally waterboarded Khalid Sheikh Mohammed at a black site, or what was known as a secret prison in Poland, he said, if it were today, I'd do it again. Defense attorneys who are speaking for Mohammed in this military commission, and by the way, there are four other defendants up there with him, they say that the interrogation program included waterboarding, sleep deprivation, beatings, rectal rehydration. In other words, they stuck something up their butts and shoved water into their systems. I hope it was only water. And sexual humiliation. That all of that really amounted to torture. The CIA says, hey, those techniques were harsh, but they were legal. And there's a film coming out from Amazon Studios. It's out, actually. It's called The Report. And it dramatizes the Senate investigation, part of which was released in 2014, that condemned this idea of enhanced interrogation. And the Senate investigation said that the whole concept of enhanced interrogation was ineffective and brutal. That the CIA had actively avoided congressional oversight. And in, excuse me, in the Senate's view, that interrogation program made us less secure, not safer. Mitchell and another psychologist named John Bruce Jessen received up to $1,800 a day for their services. They later formed a company that was paid about $81 million to help operate the interrogation program over several years. Seems to me, I recall having been told that, you know, once they got the information from Sheikh Mohammed, they stopped doing it. The American Psychological Association condemned both of these psychologists for violating the ethics of their profession and leaving a stain on the discipline of psychology. The Obama administration had hoped to try Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in federal court in Manhattan, but that was dropped after the GOP Congress passed a law forbidding the federal government from spending money transporting prisoners from Guantanamo to the United States. This is how the Senate stopped the Obama administration from doing anything. He was commander in chief. He could have told the service how to deal with this and to bring that prisoner back. So the Senate, the GOP-led Senate at the time, passed a law, because that's what they do. They passed a law saying no federal money could be used to transport prisoners from Guantanamo to the U.S. Now, with regard to the 2020 election, this piece, again, something you might not know if you didn't listen to this show, this piece just blew me away. The Supreme Court, no less than the Supreme Court, agreed to resolve an issue that could tip the outcome of a close election. They're going to decide whether electors have the right to defy their state's choice for president by voting for the candidate of their choice. Electors are supposed to be independent. Most states have a rule that says whatever our state goes for in terms of the president is what the electors from our state have to vote for, because it's not the individual voters, it's the Electoral College. The justices have agreed to review a surprising decision from the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals last year that said that the electors established by the Constitution have a right to make a choice when they vote for president. When Americans cast their votes for president, they're actually choosing electors who will cast the state's votes the following January. And that's when whoever's going to be president gets decided. Since about the early 1800s, it has been understood that the electors will cast their votes for the candidate who won the most votes in their state. But if electors have a constitutional right to pick someone else in a close contest, it could take weeks to decide who's president, and electors could decide for themselves who they want to vote for, regardless of who the state voted for. Ah, don't you just love the way our democracy works? This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. I'm here live every Sunday from 10 to noon at iHub Radio. Please join me.